Okay. The sheets are being passed around. Okay, before we start today's topics, let me just, two little points that I wanted to follow up from last week's shiur. First of all, we talked last week about Bishul Nachri and the Machloket between the Machaber and the Ramah, which is reflected in a Machloket in contemporary practice between Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, where the Ashkenazic practice is to be lenient with Bishul Nachri as long as a Jew lights the fire. But for Sfaradim, Father Mechaber, they don't accept that, and they need to actually have the person put the food on the fire itself. So someone asked me, I forgot who asked me, I apologize who it was, but somebody asked me, can a Sephardi eat in an Ashkenazi's house? If the Ashkenazi has, let's say you have an Ashkenazic family that has a maid or some sort of worker who's not Jewish, and the Ashkenazim completely legitimately are makbid to turn on the fire whenever he or she cooks in their house, but then can a Sephardi, so there are two questions. First of all, can a Sephardi person eat the food that was cooked by the person? And even if not, even if you'll say, okay, so I know I have Sephardic guests coming over, and this time I'm going to make sure that the goy doesn't do the cooking. I'm going to do the cooking myself. But the kalim, all my pots have what the Sephardim hold as bishul nachri absorbed in the pots, and the pots would be, according to that psak, not kosher pots, and the food would be not kosher anyway. So I was asked this question last week. I looked into it a little bit. I asked my rav, actually, who pointed me to Rav Ovadia Yosef in Yechav Adat, who says he deals with this case and he deals even with cases of restaurants. It's a big problem in restaurants. Because we talked about this last week. A Rabbanut, non-Mahadrin restaurant will rely on this kula of the Rama and will have a Jew light the fire. The Mashkiach usually will light the fire, but the actual chefs are very often not Jewish. It's actually more of a problem here than in America. In America, it's probably a problem in America too. I think a lot of restaurants there, they wind up having Jewish people working there. It's a smaller market.
But not so much anymore. I've gone to a lot of restaurants. You have to know you, but you can have minimum wage people doing at least preparing the food.
Well, the issue is not preparing the food. The issue is just putting it on the fire. But okay. Yeah, okay, it's fine. So then it's a problem there also. Right, so Rav Ovadia Yosef has a kula, which he says that Sephardim, and the details of it are a little bit complex. And I don't want to spend time on it because I want to get to today's topic, but he does have a kula, even for eating the food itself in a restaurant or situation like that. It's based partially on the fact that if the goy works for you, that may be a little bit different. And he combines that with certain other things. So the bottom line is a Sephardi can eat in an Ashkenazi person's house. L'chatchila, can, yes, it is permissible. L'chatchila, it would be best not to actually, if possible, for example, certainly if you're Ashkenazic and you have a non-Jewish worker in your house and you're inviting Sephardim over, it would be appropriate to be makbid for Bishul Nachri according to Sephardic practice, which again, doesn't mean the guy can still do all the preparatory work and can stir the pot and all that. It just means the actual putting the pot on the fire should be done by a Jew. But certainly when it comes to the kalim, and if necessary, even when it comes to the food, yesh amal l'smoch, Rav Ovadia Yosef. So that was in terms of that. One other thing I wanted to just address, and this was Abby's question, if I remember correctly. We talked about Stam Yenam last week. And we talked about if you have a goy eating at your table and you have a bottle of wine. So I mentioned that the best thing to do in that situation is to only use Yayin Mevushal, because this basically solves the problem. But if there is Yayin She'eino Mevushal, so, in theory, you can solve the problem as long as the guy doesn't touch the wine. But there can still be a problem. And here's I'll just explain it briefly. Okay, let's say I have a guy at my house who's eating with us. And I arrange it in such a way, either I just tell the guy, I'm sorry, you're not allowed to touch the wine, or maybe I do something suave and make myself into the waiter and pour everyone's wine glasses or whatever the story is. However I handle the social etiquette issues, right? There can still be a problem. And here's why. Let's say I pour everybody's glasses of wine. Okay, and I go around and I give everybody a glass of wine, including the guy. No problem. And then I take the wine and I put it back in the fridge so it should stay chilled. Okay? And I say, if everyone wants more wine, just let me know. I'll be happy to get it for you. So now everyone starts drinking their wine. Now as soon as the goy picks up his cup, the wine that's in his cup turns into stam yena. Now that's okay. I mean, the wine that's in his cup is now usser. Now that's okay because he's the one who's drinking from his cup and he is allowed to drink stam yenam of goyim. He's a goy. So, first of all, no one else should drink from his cup. Fine. But even if no one else drinks from his cup, if he goes ahead and asks me for a second cup of wine, okay? So I take his cup of wine, which has usser wine in it, and I take the bottle, and I pour the wine from the bottle into his cup. There's a stream of wine coming out of the bottle. As soon as it touches the wine in his cup, it's all considered to be connected, okay? And then the wine in the bottle now became usser. So that was what I wanted to just look into before I explained it to you. So how can this be resolved? Again, the simplest way to resolve this is through... So the basic solution is, again, if you're going to have non-Jews eating with you, you should use Yain Mevushal. But if you can't, I found actually on the internet an article on the Chicago Rabbinical Council who apparently they put up an article how they dealt with the following issue. Their policy is to insist on, in restaurants and things like that, where you can have non-Jews, you can't control who eats in the restaurant, right? Someone may come in with a non-Jewish friend, client, business partner, who knows what. So their policy is to use only Yayin Mevushal in restaurants. However, they had a particular restaurant or some other establishment that wanted to do a wine and cheese tasting party. And they felt that this was very important for their business or whatever it is, and they wanted to promote very, very high quality kosher wines, which are generally not Mevushal. And they asked the CRC, the Chicago Rabbinical Council, if there's any way they can do it. And they agreed to do it as long as the proprietor paid extra money for them to be able to institute additional precautions, which involved having additional mashgichim at the event. And the way they solved the problem was that it was like a wine and cheese tasting thing. You come around and taste all the different wines. So the policy at this event was that only the people serving the wine, which were all religious Jews, can serve the wine. And they used disposable cups, whatever, but there was no second cup. Like, if you want another glass of wine, they'll give you a new glass. Nobody gets refills in the same glass. So that's how they solved that problem. But kitzur, that's the issue. So if you have a goy at your table, you have to deal with that. Yeah.
I just want to ask one more question then. We differentiate, at least I've heard this quite a few times, that not just a goy, but if you are opening a bottle of wine, I don't even think if it's mavushal. I don't think it matters if it's mavushal. Maybe I'm wrong, that you can't have an irreligious Jew.
Okay, we talked about that last week. I can discuss with you afterwards if you want. We talked about it last week, though. So
anyway.
I'll be happy to discuss with you afterwards. Okay. So, now, moving along to our next topic. I told you we were going to first start by dealing with halachot having to do with plants and things that are made from plants, and then move on to things that are made from animals or animal products, and then we'll move into the kitchen and deal with that. So we're making that transition now to animal products. But the first sugya I want to deal with is one that is not necessarily logically the first place you would start, but since we just spent a few weeks on pat nochri and bishul nochri and yayinesek and stam yenam, so let's talk today about chalav and vina and the famous Chalav Yisrael question. That's what today's topic is. So let's start with the following fact, okay? The din is, the Torah, of course, tells us that there are certain animals we can eat and certain animals that we're not allowed to eat. And, of course, we will get into this in much greater detail in coming shiurim. First of all, there are certain types of animals. There's what's called behemat tahora and behemat tamea. You can eat a goat, you can eat a cow, you cannot eat a pig, you cannot eat a horse, you cannot eat a donkey, etc. There's behemat tahora and behemat tamea. There's also oaf and dog. Right now we're talking about animals. And even a behemat tahora, even a kosher animal, you can't, a behemat tahora, like you can't eat a pig. You can't eat a donkey. That's it. You can eat a cow, but that doesn't mean you can eat any particular cow out there. The cow has to be slaughtered in a way that makes it kasher shechita. And if the cow dies through some other method, it's called a nevela, and it's asur. But also, there's something called a trefa. A trefa, and there's some confusion about this, because the term treif in Yiddish came to mean anything that's not kosher. So people don't understand what the term means. But the technical halachic meaning of a trefa A trefa is an animal that was, first of all, a behemat tahora. So let's say it was a cow or a goat, an animal that you're allowed to eat. And it was properly slaughtered. It's not an avela. Right? If an animal dies through any method other than shechita, which could be it died naturally, it can be they shot it with a bullet in the head, it could even be that a shochet tried to slaughter it correctly and messed up. Right? And the shochet says, my hand slipped, this was not a kosher shechita, that animal's an avela. But that, a trefa is an animal that was slaughtered correctly. So it's a kosher animal, it's a cow, let's say, and it was slaughtered correctly. So it's not a behemoth mei, and it's not a nevela. But what is it? After the animal dies, after the animal is slaughtered, we open it up, and we see that the animal had some kind of a wound, some kind of a disease, some kind of a defect, which the animal was close to dying anyway. The animal was about to die. Maybe we didn't know that. And now it's dead because we slaughtered it. But even if we hadn't slaughtered it, it would have died. It was a very, very ill animal. And we'll talk a little bit when we get into the laws of kashrus. This relates to the concept of what's called glatt kosher meat. We'll talk about that. But that's called a trefa. And a trefa is also prohibited. Milk that comes from an animal that's permissible is permissible. Milk that comes from an animal that's not permissible is not permissible. So first of all, if there's an animal, if it was a behemoth tmeya that gives milk, and there are some animals that are, horses give milk, donkeys give milk, dogs give milk, I think pigs give milk. So the milk of those animals is asur. The milk of a behemoth tahora, a cow, a goat, a sheep, is kasher, is permissible, as long as the animal is not a trefa. If you slaughter an animal and find that it's a trefa, then any milk that came from that animal in the last few within the last few days, is we now know that milk is asur. Okay, so that's the basic concept.
So you have to throw out all the milk.
You would have to then throw out the milk. If you don't know what happened to that milk any longer, then we have to get involved with questions of rove and bittul and that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
Okay,
makes
so.
Makes a lot of sense, though, from a health perspective. If it's a disease animal, you open up an animal, it just goes in and it's not.
Well, it depends what kind of disease it is. It might not be diseased. It might have a hole in its heart. That doesn't affect the quality of the milk necessarily, but it's still, you know. Meaning, certainly if there's a health problem with the milk, then you shouldn't eat it for health reasons, and that's even halacha. But even in case where the health department is warranted to give it a stamp of approval, it still is. Okay. Now, if you remember a few weeks ago, we learned the mission of Masechet Avodah Zarah that listed. It said that, you know, certain things we get from Goyim are Asur Bachila and Bahana, namely wine because of concerns of Tikrovet Avodah Zarah. And other things are Asur Bachila and Mutar Bahana. So it mentioned Pat Nachri, it mentioned Bishul Nachri, it also mentioned Chalav. It was thrown in there. I told you at the time we're not talking about that now because it's a different category. But now we're talking about it. Okay, so it says in that mission that Chalav Nachrim, milk that you get from a Goy, is prohibited. The Mishnah mentions it there. There's also another Mishnah of Avodah Zarah. I didn't put the Mishnah on the sheet. What I did put on the sheet, though, is the Seif in the Shulchan Aruch, which records the bottom line halacha. It's based on a Mishnah and a Braita in Masechet Avodah Zarah. So let's read source number one on the sheet. It says the following: Chalav shechilvo oved kochavim, milk that was milked by a goy, ve'ein Yisrael roehu. Okay, so I have a goy who milked an animal. And there is no Jew who watched him milk the animal. The guy did it on his own. Let's say he's a farmer, he has a cow, and he sells milk. He milked his own cow, and now he wants to sell me the milk, or give me the milk, or whatever. Asur shema irev bo chalav tameh. It is prohibited. And the reason for the concern is, we can't trust the guy halachically. In one of our first year, we talked about ne'emanut. How do you know something's kosher? And we said that all Jews have a Einachad Neman Bisurim, and all Jews have a Chezkat Kashu, but that doesn't work for non-Jews. We can't trust a non-Jew's testimony that something's kasher. And we're afraid that maybe the non-Jew put some milk from another animal into the milk. For example, let's say he's a little farmer, he's got a certain number of cows, and he sells milk. And he has his customers who come to him on a regular basis. And today, his cows didn't give as much milk as usual. And he's short. And he doesn't know what to do because he wants to be able to sell milk to all of his customers. So he goes over to his horse, and he milks the horse. and he pours the horse's milk in with the cow's milk, and he sells it. And assuming that it's a quantity that's not batel, which we'll get to exactly how to determine that, so this would be, that would be also daraisa, because you're drinking horse's milk. Since we can't trust the goy, the halacha is, just one second, Esti, since we can't trust the goy, therefore, it's asur to drink chalav nachri. But it says only if a Jew didn't wash him milk it. If a Jew stood there and watched him milk the cow, right? If he had a mashgiach, basically, who's watching the process, so then we're not relying on the goy. The goy owns the cow, and the goy did the work, and the goy is going to get paid because it's his milk. But as far as the testimony that I need, that this is all milk that's permissible, I have the Jew, and I'm going to rely on the Jew. It then goes on and says, let's say the Jew's not actually watching the actual milking at every minute, but the Jew's sitting outside, right outside the house. Is that good enough? He could walk in at any minute. So then it depends. If the guy's milking the animal, and the Jew's on premises, like right outside the house or something, but doesn't actually see the actual milking. So if the guy doesn't have any non-kosher animals, he doesn't have a horse, and he doesn't have a cow that's a treifa either. So if he wanted horse's milk, he'd have to go out and get it from somewhere else. And the Jew's in the general vicinity, so that's enough. So where I lost my place. I'm saying, but if he had a, like a horse, for example, among his animals, if he has a tamei animal in his flock, so he might have, so there's a much greater concern. He has a horse right there. And maybe he takes the horse's milk. By Yisrael Yoshev mi bachutz, if the guy has no chalav tamei in his possession, or animal tamei that could lead to it, so then it's enough that there's a Jew on the premises. If the guy does have, let's say, a behemah tamei, like a horse, then you need something a little bit of a higher level. First of all, you can't just stomp buy milk from the guy. It has to be that he's producing milk specifically for the Jew. Now, the Jew comes to him and says, I want you to give me 4 liters of milk straight from the cow. Please go milk it for me. And I'll wait right here. So first of all, the guy knows that the Jew is planning to buy this particular milk. And the Jew could see. So for example, it's saying if the Jew's sitting down, and he can't see from where he's sitting, but if he would stand up, he'd be able to see. So that's the goy, since the goy knows that the Jew's here to buy the milk, and the Jew's only going to buy the milk if it's from a kosher animal, and although the Jew's not watching me right now, at any second he could stand up and look, so the goy's going to be, he's not going to do that, because he's going to be scared, he's going to lose his customer. So in other words, the principle is the following. If a goy milks the animal, and there's no Jew watching, in principle it's asur. If there's a Jew on premises, certainly if a Jew watches, that's good enough. That's great. If a Jew's on premises, but not actually watching the milking, that's good enough if the goy doesn't have any non-kosher animals here. And if the goy does have non-kosher animals here, then you need the Jew to be on premises, able to see at any minute if he wants to. And the goy has to be milking specifically for the Jew, so that the goy will be deterred by the possibility that the Jew may stand up and watch him. That is the din in the Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara. I want to read also the next source, which is a topic we're going to talk about at the end of today's shiur, but it's related. In addition to the issur of chalav nachri, there's also an issue of gvinat nachri. If a goy makes cheese, it's also prohibited, even if the milk that the cheese was made from is not prohibited. Example, let's say there's a goy in the cheese making business, and I want him to make cheese for me. I say, I can't, I need Chalav Yisrael cheese. I can't use Chalav Nachim. Chalav Nachim is Asur. So I go over to the guy and I say, listen, I want to order some cheese from you. I'm going to supply the milk. Okay, I'm going to deliver you X number of liters of milk. You're going to make it into cheese, and I'll come back and buy the cheese from you. Okay? And let's even say we do it in some kind of closed container or something, so I can be sure that the cheese actually came from this milk or something like that. It's still aser. Why? Mipnei shema'midim otam be'or kevat shechitatam shehi nevela. Basically, the way you make cheese, cheese is made from, basically what happens, part of the milk, I think it's the fat that's in the milk, can be turned into a solid, and it's a chemical process that requires certain enzymes in order to, something called rennet, in order to turn the milk into cheese. One of the primary sources for that enzyme is from the stomach of animals. Okay? Now, for reasons that we'll be able to discuss a little bit, you know, later on in the course, although this may sound strange to you, the fact that you're taking a piece of an animal, and which is basically meat, and sticking it into milk, is actually not a problem. Meaning, if you had an animal that was properly shechted and prepared, and you take the rennet from that animal, you can make cheese that's kosher. There's no basar b'chalav problem here. But if the rennet is either from a behema tmeya, or even from a behema tahora, but a nevela, right? Which a goy is gonna, that's what a goy is gonna use. A goy is not buying kosher animals and having them properly slaughtered or poured into shechita to make the cheese. So we're afraid, therefore, that the cheese has in it this substance that comes from the stomach of the animal, and that would be asur. And it's asur, and it says, va'afilu hemiduha ba'asavim asura. Even if there are also other sources for this enzyme, there are certain plants that you can get the enzyme from also. So even if I know for a fact that the goy didn't use the meat of a non-kosher animal, he actually used a vegetarian source for the rennet to make the cheese, and there's no animal product in here at all other than the milk, and even if the milk is not a problem, it's still aser. That's the din of gvinat nachrim. So these are the two dinim that we're going to be talking about now, chalav nachrim and gvinat nachrim. Someone had a question?
Yes. It's aser as long as the guy makes it?
In other words,
Jew that has plant enzymes, it's also aser? No.
Well, if a Jew makes the cheese, it's fine. But you're asking me, if what you're asking is, does the Jew have to actually make the cheese, or does the Jew have to own the cheese, or does the Jew have to watch the cheese being made? That is exactly the machloket that we'll talk about. Okay? Yes, Mayan.
What chalav yisrael, for the examples that you gave before, what is considered chalav yisrael if the Jew is standing and watching all the time?
Well, that's what we said in Shulchan Aruch. If a Jew milks the cow, it's chalav yisrael. If a Jew watches the cow being milked, it's chalav yisrael. And even if the Jew is on premises, according to the various conditions we've discussed, it'll be considered chalav yisrael. It's not covered by the issur of chalav nachrim.
So then what is...
Chalav nachrim is you just go to a guy and buy milk, stop. Okay? But now let's get to the real issue.
How can that be
kosher? Yafe. Okay. So now let's talk about the issue. Okay? In Chutzlaretz, in Eretz Yisrael, at least for fresh milk, we don't have a problem of chalav nachrim, because the milk that we buy here, fresh milk, is all bought from Jewish farmers. In Eretz Yisrael, we have a different problem. Dairy products may have imported ingredients in them. Okay? So ice creams and things like that. Okay? A bag of milk, right? A bag of milk in this country is going to be chalav Yisrael for sure. They have a different problem in this country, which is that it may have been milked on Shabbos. And that's a different issue that maybe we'll talk about. But chalav Yisrael problem, for at least for fresh milk, you don't have in this country. In Chutz La'aretz, however, if you go into your random supermarket and buy a random container of milk from the shelf that says milk...
What it says OU.
If it says... I'm not sure.
What does that mean?
I'm not sure what the OU means. I'm not sure. You have to check the OU website. But let's start with this, okay? Most Jews who live in Chutz La'aretz, including, I assume, most, if not all of you, have the practice of not only buying milk that has hashgacha on the label. Just walking into a thing and buying I'm talking about milk. I'm not talking about any products yet right now. I'm not talking about ice creams and yogurt. I'm talking about just milk. It says 100%, what do they write on there? Pasteurized, homogenized, grade A, vitamin D milk. Right? That's what it says. So you're going to go ahead and buy that and use that. Now let's understand what that is. That is milk that came from a farm. The farmer almost definitely was not Jewish. And there's no hashgacha here. There's no super. There's no mashgiach kashrut, Jewish person that went in to supervise the milking. And therefore, that is chalav nachrim. Some people use the word chalav stam. That's a nice term. It's not from. It's not chalav Israel. It's chalav stam. It's chalav nachrim. It was bought from a guy, and it's clearly based on the Shulchan Aruch. It seems to clearly be asur. However, what's the possibility that it might be permissible? The reality is that, well, actually, you know what? Before I get to that, let's discuss a machloket. Okay? We have the Isser of Chalav Nachrim, and we have the Isser of Gvinat Nachrim, which I showed you two consecutive Sifim in Shulchan Aruch. The first source was Yoredeya, Simen Kuftet Vav, Sif Aleph, and the second source was Sif Bet. We have two Isurim that are basically very similar, right? We're not allowed to buy milk from a guy because we're afraid that he may have mixed in milk that's Asur, Chalav Tameh. And we're not allowed to buy cheese from a guy because he may have mixed into the cheese a substance which is Asur. So they're both very similar rules. And yet, if you look carefully, there's a big difference in the way the halacha is formulated in Sif Aleph with Chalav, and the way the halacha is formulated in Sif Bet when it comes to Gvina. What's the difference? What is different about these two laws? What says Asur in both? Sif Aleph says Chalav shechalva ovi kochav men Yisrael roeu Asur. Shema yirei bo Chalav tamei. Sif Bet says Gvinot ovi kochav Asrum. Vnei shemamin dinun tam beor kevat shchitatam shehi nevela. But what exactly is Asur, yeah?
I don't know, it seems to be more lenient with milk, but not.
What's the leniency?
That if a Jew is walking.
Correct, Ricky, there. Exactly. Sif Bet says, Gvinot Obde Kochavim Asur. It doesn't say, but Sif Aleph says, Chalab Obde Kochavim Ve'en Yisrael Ro'eihu. The Chalab that's Asur is Chalab that's milked by a goy without a Jew watching. And then, when you get further into it, it seems that the Jew doesn't even have to actually watch. It just has to be plausible that the Jew might watch, and etc. But Sif Bet says, Gvinat Ovdei Kochavim Asur, period. The question is, what is the significance between this distinction? The Pri Chadash, Sif number 4. The Pri Chadash has a huge kula here. He writes, I give you one line out of a very lengthy piece. He writes in that piece, not in the one line that I gave you, he writes in that piece that in many parts of Europe, for example, in Amsterdam, at his time, it was very common for Jews to buy milk from goyim without any concern for this, and he's trying to figure out, is there any heter for this? And he writes that there's a difference between gvina and chalav. First I'll read it, and then I'll explain it. He says, dafka gvina, he davar ha-ne'esar b'minyan. I'll explain that term in a minute. Masha'ein chen chalav she'chal v'algoy, asur lo mishum gzeira, rak mishum chashash ta'arovet davar tameh. Ve'heicha deleika chashash, whenever there is no chashash, ta'arovet mutar. Let me explain. When it comes to gvina, he says, this is a davar she'ne'esar b'minyan. What does that mean? It means, well, let me put it to you differently. Let's say the Gemara said nothing about Gvinat Nachrim. There's not a word about cheese in the entire Shas. Let's say. And I would come into this classroom and tell you, girls, let's talk about cheese. The way that cheese is made is that cheese needs rennet. Rennet can come from kosher sources or from non-kosher sources. What do you think we should do to make sure that the cheese we're eating is kosher?
Eat kosher rennet.
Make sure it's made by a Jew.
Or at least that it's supervised by a Jew, right? Okay, in other words, this is no different than anything else in kashrut. How do you know that your candy bar is kosher? You need to know that all the ingredients in it are permissible. So you need some form of, if it's something that is impossible to determine, you know, without supervision, then you need some kind of supervision. So, what's the chiddush of gvina? Says the Pri Chadash, gvina is what's called a davar shenetzar b'minyan. Minyan means that the Sanhedrin got together and took a vote. They made what's called a gzeirah. They made a law that says gvinat nochrim is asur. And as I'm sure you know from other areas of halacha, when there's an isur derabbanan, when the rabbis make something prohibited, they always tell us why they did it. They don't just stop make something asur. Sometimes they would wait. Actually, this very Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that they perhaps didn't tell people right away. They wanted people to accept the law and only later on. But eventually, they always revealed what the reason behind it was. And the rule is that even when the reason is no longer applicable, the law still exists until sometime as a Sanhedrin, a future Sanhedrin, might change it. I know I spoke about this at length in my Hilchot Shabbat class. I don't know if the others discussed it. But for example, in Hilchot Shabbat, a classic example of this is refuah. The rabbis prohibited us from certain types of medical treatments on Shabbat because of a concern that we might go ahead and make our own medications, which would involve grinding up various herbs, and that would be an Isser Daraisa. That concern is no longer relevant. None of us today would even know how to do this, and we don't have the equipment to do it. The way things are done today, this concern no longer exists. Nevertheless, the law still exists. Bat lahatam, lo bat lahagzera. So says the Pri Chadash, that's the case with Gvina. With Gvina, the rabbi said, we're afraid that a goy may put non-kosher rennet into the cheese, therefore you're not allowed to use Gvinat Nochrim, period. But the Pri Chadash claims that was never the case with Chalav. They never made a law prohibiting Chalav Nochrim. It's just a reality that the goy might put non-kosher milk into the milk, and therefore you can't trust the goy. And therefore you have to have a Jew watching it or something like that. But, says the Pri Chadash, so first of all, that's why when it comes to Gvina, the din is just Gvinat Nachrim Asr, period. When it comes to Chalav, it's not Chalav Nachrim Asr. It's Chalav Shechalvo Nachri Ve'en Yisrael Ro'ehu, right? That there was no Jew watching him. As long as a Jew watches him, it's fine. And not only that, even if the Jew didn't see it, as long as we can be halachically confident that there's no milk from a non-kosher animal in there, then it would be okay. Because there never was, according to the Pri Chadash, there was never an Isser of Chalav Nachrim. It was just a reality that you can't trust the guy. And therefore, if there's a concern that there might be non-kosher milk in there, you're only allowed to use the milk if you can alleviate that concern. One way to do it is having a Jew watch it. Another way to do it is having a Jew in the vicinity that the goy would be afraid to cheat because it might get caught. And maybe there'll be other ways also. That's according to the Pri Chadash. However, and that's how he explains the difference between Sif Bet and Sif Gimel. Aleph and Bet. However, if you look in source number 5, the Chatam Sofer fundamentally disagrees with the Pri Chadash. And he says, Chalav Gzeirat Kadmonit Taita Kodem She'asru Gvina. He says, it's not like the Pri Chadash thinks that there is no gzeira of Chalav Nachrim. There absolutely is a gzeira of Chalav Nachrim. Even before they prohibited the gvina, they prohibited the milk. V'az asru chalav she'en yisro ro'ehu, af al gav de tchilat gzeirato haita mishum chashash irev devar tamei, mikol makom kevan she'gazru v'asru b'minyan, the very term that the Pri Chadash thinks doesn't apply here. The Chatam Sofer says does apply here. Asru kol chalav she'en yisro ro'eh chaliva. O yachol lirot afilu leka chashash davar tameh. So we have here a very fundamental machloket. If I had a situation where it's chalav that was milked by a goy and there's no Jew washing at all, but I had some other method to verify beyond doubt or beyond halachic doubt, we'll talk about what that means in a second, that this is only kosher milk, But it doesn't meet the description. It's chalav nachri. It's milk from a goat. But I'm 100% sure that it's only kosher milk. So what's the din? According to the Pri Chadash, you tell me. It's
good.
What?
It's good.
It's fine. Because with Gvina, that wouldn't be okay. If I have a Gvina Nachrim and I'm 100% sure that the rennet was only synthetic rennet or vegetable rennet, and there's no problem, it's still usher, right? Because they made a rule. And the law applies. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says in Sivbet. It says in Sivbet that even if the guy used vegetable rennet, afilu hemidua be'asavin, it's still usher. Because that was a gzeira davar shebeminyan. The rabbis made an isser, you're not allowed to use gvinat nachrim. And even if in this particular case, or even if all cases, that concern no longer exists, it doesn't matter. The isser is the isser. Until some future Sanhedrin maybe changes it, that's the law. But when it comes to chalav, according to Pri Chadash, there never was a law. It was just a reality. You can't trust the goy. If you have another way to determine that the chalav is okay, the Pri Chadash would say it's fine. And the Chasam Sofer says, no, it's not. The Chasam Sofer says there's no difference between chalav and gvina. They're both Davar Shebeminyan, they're both a gzeira, they're both asur. They changed the rules of it. In Gvina, they made a blanket isur. In Chalav, they said it's asur unless a Jew watches it. But unsupervised, let's call it that, according to Chasam Sofer, unsupervised Chalav Nachri is asur midrabanan, and therefore, according to him, even if you were sure that it's only the milk of a kosher animal, but no Jew was involved in watching it, it would be asur. So this is a fundamental machloka between the Pri Chadash and the Chasam Zofer.
I mean,
the Chasonish kind of explained it.
You said both of them are husband.
Not the Chasonish, the
Chasam Sofer. Sorry. But I'm saying, I don't get why there's such a huge difference between, I don't think the Zera and the Gvina,
why were they stricter on the Gvina than on the Chalav?
I don't get it.
It might have to do with the way in which cheese is made versus the way milk is made. It may have to do with the fact that milk is more of a necessity and they felt that they have to give some more leniencies. You can live without cheese, but milk is much more of a basic.
It sounds like potatoes are both fair and mashed potatoes aren't.
Milk and cheese are not. I mean, cheese is made from milk, but it's two different things. The concern is completely different. Okay, now. So let's talk about the reality in Chutz Laretz. Okay? Yes.
Say a Jew
is watching, that means supervision. And to me, I always thought that if a Jew was watching in supervision, that doesn't make it Chalav Yisrael, but it does make it kosher. No, it makes it under the category of Chalav Yisrael. Okay. Now, milk that's sold as Chalav Yisrael doesn't mean that there's a Jewish farmer. There's very few Jewish farmers nowadays outside of Israel. It means that there were Jews involved in supervising. It means there were mashkichim there. That's what it means. Now, so I'm not sure what the OU means. I'll explain to you in a minute why I'm not sure. You can easily check this. So let's understand something. I told you that if you go into a random supermarket in America, for example, or in England, and you buy a plain old bottle of milk without any kosher indicators on the label, at least, this is chalav nachrim. It's milk that was milked by a goy. And there was no Jews involved, not in milking it, not in owning it, not in supervising it, not in hashgacha, nothing. But you can be virtually certain that the milk is all from a kosher animal. And here's why. Two reasons. Number one, there is, in most countries today, it's not necessarily true in all countries, and especially if you go to some less developed countries, this may not be true. It used to not even be true in all countries in Europe, I'm not even up to date. There may be certain countries even in Europe where it's not. Certainly certain places in Africa, South America, I don't know what the deal is. But in the United States, and in most European countries as well, there's strict government regulations. I went today onto the website of the United States. First I went onto the United States Department of Agriculture, and then the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and I found the actual code that says, first of all, that if you advertise a product as milk, among other requirements, it has to be 100% cow's milk. It can't even be goat's milk. If you want to sell goat's milk, you have to label it goat's milk. Milk is defined by the U.S. Federal Food and Drug Administration as cow's milk, 100%. And there is regulation. Dairy farms are regularly inspected, and if people are found in violation, there are fines. That's point number one. Point number two. And not because they're trying to enforce kashrus. They're not interested in kashrus, obviously. The FDA is interested in consumer protection. They want people to know what they're buying. And that's one of the things that they are interested in. People might have allergies, all sorts of other things. You have a right as a consumer, they feel, to know what you're buying, and they've decided that milk means cow's milk. So if you want to sell, you're allowed to sell. You're allowed to sell horse's milk too. And by the way, people do sell horse's milk. Apparently it's very healthy. Camel's milk also, apparently people drink. But and it's legal to sell it, but you have to label it as horse's milk or cow's milk. Just one second. That's number one. Number two, there's another reason that you can be virtually certain that it's only the milk of a kosher animal. And that is that no farmer in today's reality would have any motivation to... I gave you the scenario that existed at the time of Chazal. The guy has 3 cows and a horse, right? And he's running out of milk today because one of his cows didn't give a lot of milk, so he might milk the horse. Modern dairy production, there are huge flocks of cows. They're milked by machines. You can't even use those machines to milk other animals. You need different machines to milk the other animals. It would be much more expensive to get, let's say, horse's milk than cow's milk. And horse's milk is also much more valuable than cow's milk. If you do have horse's milk, you can sell it as horse's milk for much, much, much more money. Hundreds of times, I think, the value. It's a specialty item that people pay a lot of money for. No person in their right mind would go ahead and mix large quantities of horse's milk or camel's milk into cow's milk because it's very expensive to produce and it's worth so much more. So there's economic reasons which are different, the reality, than it was before. So therefore, the starting point now of the conversation, I see once again I'm running over time here. I'm running out of time. The starting point of the conversation is that today, if you go into a supermarket and just see plain old milk, at least in countries that have this regulation, which the United States certainly does, and at least many of the countries of Western Europe, certainly England, I know for sure, does, then you can be very, very certain, bordering on 100%, that you're getting 100% cow's milk. And if there are, and the concern of trefa is not really a concern. There are some issues with trefa, but let's assume for now that you can assume that if there is a trefa, it's a very small minority of animals, and it's batel. There is a concern about certain types of procedures that they're now doing on the animals that might raise the incidence of trefa, but let's leave that out of the conversation for now and assume that that's not a problem. So if that's the case, so our starting point should be that according to the Pri Chadash, it should be mutter. Because according to Pri Chadash, there was never an Isser. It's just that you needed to have assurances that you're getting cow's milk. You can't trust the goy. You can't trust the goy. But you can, if you know, first of all, because there's government inspectors who are doing this not because if we would ask the government to enforce our kashrus rules, that would be worthless also because the government are goyim. But the government is doing it for their own purposes. They're doing it for the sake of the society. They want to have a society where there's consumer protection. And we see that they enforce these laws and they enforce them strictly for their own purposes. And on top of that, there's not reason to really enforce this particular rule because nobody in their right mind would do it anyway anymore. There was once a very strong economic motivation to do it. Today there's zero economic motivation to do it. So according to Pri Chadash, there should be no problem at all. But according to the Chasam Sofer, he said beferush, that it doesn't matter. It's still prohibited, even if you know for sure. Rav Moshe Feinstein, and this is the famous tshuva, source number 6. Uvidvar hachalav shel ha, what's that word? Ha-companies. That's how Rav Moshe used to write. He used to write all these English words in very, very strangely transliterated Hebrew. Right? Now, that was Rav Moshe's style. The later editions of Igros Moshe, they translated into modern Hebrew. Rav Moshe wrote in his English words, they translated into modern Hebrew. Like they would have, this is from one of the early volumes. The later volumes, they would have written ha-chaverot, and then in parentheses, they would still write companies. This is how he wrote. Udvar chalav shel ha-companies b'medina teinu asher yesh pikuach ha-memshala ve'im ya'arvu chalav b'matmeya ye'anshu v'gam yasgiru ta'esek shalem. If they would do this, if they would put in milk from non-kosher animals, they'd be fined and punished and they could risk having their whole business shut down. Therefore, they're definitely afraid of doing it. Yesh tam gadol lahatir. And he writes, af below, that's a typo there, I typed this in by hand, it should say with a tet, af below shitata pri chadash. Even without the pri chadash, this is what Moshe's chiddush, certainly according to the pri chadash it would be allowed. He says, even without the pri chadash. Mishum diha ikar diyidia brura hu kira'aya mamash. Rav Moshe says something very interesting. He says that he believes, certainly according to Pri Chadash, there's no problem. But the Pri Chadash is a Dat Yachid, and there's a, or maybe not a Dat Yachid, but a minority. And there are many, many other authorities who agree with the Chassam Sofer. By the way, I skipped over the Rambam, but if you look at the Rambam, it's mashma from the Rambam, like the Chassam Sofer. The Rambam says if you drink Chalav Nachrim, you get Makat Mardut. Makat Mardut is a form of Malkot that is given for someone who violates an Issur Derabbanan. That's also an indicator that the Rambam seems to feel that this is really an Isser, not just a Chashash. But Rav Moshe's Chiddush is the following. He says, the Gzeira of Chalav Nachrim is a real Isser, not like the Pri Chadash things. It's an Isser Derabbanan. But it's an Isser Derabbanan that said, if a Jew watches, for example, it's allowed. And therefore, he says, if we have a situation where I have pure knowledge, absolute knowledge, that this is kosher milk, so he thinks the Gzeira didn't apply to that. The Gzeira wasn't the blanket prohibition on Chalav Nachrim, like Vina was. In other words, his point is, the distinction between Sif Aleph and Sif Bet exists even if you don't accept the Pri Chadash. Even if you assume, as the Chassam Sofer and many others, and Rav Moshe himself does, that both Sif Aleph and Sif Bet are Gzeiros Derabbanan, they're clearly different. Sif Aleph has exceptions in it. If you have knowledge, for example, that a Jew watched it, then there's no Isser. And Rav Moshe believes, and he's a lengthy tshuva, I gave you only excerpts, there's actually three tshuvas in a row. The same rabbi wrote him a fairly short answer, and then that rabbi wrote back and argued with him, and he wrote a longer answer. And then that rabbi wrote back a few months later and argued again, and Rav Moshe wrote an even longer answer. And they printed three tshuvas in a row, where he goes through the whole analysis with all of his proofs. He believes that if there is clear knowledge, and he believes that this meets the criteria of clear knowledge, that this is permissible. And therefore he writes, V'lachein b'chalav she'asru, it is an iser, but rak b'chalvo akum v'ein Yisrael ro'ehu, yesh latir gam b'Yisrael yod'in yidia brura dehave kiri'iyah. If I have clear knowledge based on the fact that, again, as we said, the government is supervising and the economic realities make it such that no person in their right mind would do it, those two things together are considered knowledge, which is as if I saw it. It's the same thing as if a Jew watched it. It doesn't only apply according to Pri Chadash, it's according to anyone. And therefore he writes, I read this a couple of weeks ago in Machshavei Yisrael class, these lines. V'lachein harotzeh lesmochu lahakel, someone who wants to be lenient and to rely on this, yesh lo tam gadol, there's a good reason to be lenient and to rely on it, v'rashai, and it's permissible, kemo shemakilin b'zeh harov b'nei adam shomrei Torah, V'gam harbei rabbanim. Many rabbis are also lenient. V'chas v'shalom lomar she'osin shelo kedin. God forbid you should criticize someone who does this. It's completely permissible. Aval says Rav Moshe, mikol makom, lebali nefesh min haroi la'achmir. He says still, for a person who's a bal nefesh, for a person who's a particularly spiritual person, it's proper to be machmir, he writes. V'ein b'zeh mishum yura, it's not considered arrogant. V'chein ani noheg lahatchmir la'atzmi. Anybody who drinks milk in America is relying on Rav Moshe Feinstein. You should just know that he wouldn't drink the milk that you're drinking, that you're relying on him for. He himself wouldn't drink it. He writes it. V'chein ani noheg lahatchmir la'atzmi. He only drank Chalav Yisrael. Ava. Ava. Not because it's the din, because it's a chumrah that, or it's a midas chasidus, whatever term you want to use. Ava. Mi shirotzeh lahakel. Someone wants to be lenient, who will say kedina, he's doing something completely legitimate, v'ein lach shivo kimizalzel b'yisurim. You shouldn't consider such a person to be in any way treating Yisurim lightly. Bottom line, therefore, of Moshe Feinstein, he himself is machmir, yesh tam gadol lahachmir, because he holds there really is an Isser. It's not like the Pri Chadash. He holds there really is an Isser. But he holds that in this case we can consider this to be something that's not covered by the Zayin. I'm sorry, Esti, I'm just almost out of time, so I'm going to have to take your question afterwards. So that is the basis for the standard position in Chutz La'aretz, which most of the certainly the OU, and many of the other kashrus organizations around the world rely on. In answer to your question, therefore, I'm not 100% sure what an OU on a bottle of milk means. The OU holds that you can eat milk without the OU. Therefore, I'm not sure if a company asks for an OU what their criteria for putting it on. I don't know. But what I do know, is that a dairy product with an OU on it, okay, so let's talk about Häagen-Dazs ice cream. And there's a reason I'm mentioning Häagen-Dazs. We have still 2 more minutes. Don't leave yet. Häagen-Dazs ice cream is made from milk. That might sound like a strange statement that ice cream is made from milk. You should know, most ice cream is not made from milk anymore. Most of the ice creams you eat are made from a bunch of different synthetic ingredients and all kinds of stuff that and has powdered milk in it. Häagen-Dazs, which is high-quality ice cream, is made from actual milk. And the OU gives it a hashkacha. What does that hashkacha mean? That hashkacha means that the milk, that all the ingredients in there are kosher, the chocolate and the sugar and all kinds of flavors are all supervised, and that the milk is kosher according to the psak of the OU. But the milk is not Chalav Yisrael. The milk is just regular old milk. Okay? The Rabbanut here in Israel does not accept this heter. Not only from a Hajjan, but even for regular Rabbanut. Regular Rabbanut will not allow Chalav Nachrim, even non-Mahadrin, and therefore the Rabbanut banned Häagen-Dazs ice cream. They were selling it for a while here in Israel. The Rabbanut banned it, and they don't sell it here anymore. They sell Ben and Jerry's, which you also know is made, but it's made here. Right? It's made here. And that's where it's Chalav Yisrael.
But when we went to Ben and Jerry's, it said we had like a kosher sheet. One of the things was some of them were Chalav Nachrim.
No. Avkat Chalav Nachrim. That's the last thing I'm getting to. In my 30 seconds left. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, who was a Rav here in Yerushalayim a little less than 100 years ago. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank had an intermediate position. He did not accept Rav Moshe's heter. And by the way, the Chazon Ish also agrees with Rav Moshe. Everyone thinks the Chazon Ish is machmir and everything. Here's an example where the Chazon Ish agreed with Rav Moshe. The Chazon Ish felt you could rely, if you needed to, on Chalav Nachrim like Rav Moshe did. But Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank did not accept that. However, he distinguished between actual milk and milk powder. Powdered milk, he felt, is okay, because powdered milk also, we have a very clear knowledge that the powdered milk was made from kosher animals. The only problem is the Gzeira Derabanan that he feels was there, and he feels that the Gzeira Derabanan didn't cover powdered milk. I don't have time to go into his proofs, but that's what he felt. The Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael does not accept Chalav Nachri at all, even for non-Mahadrin, but they will accept, based on Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, in non-Mahadrin product, they will accept Avkat Chalav Nachri. Many dairy products made in this country have milk powder in them. Most of the ice creams you eat, the cheaper ones, are not really made from fresh milk. They're made from powdered milk and other ingredients. And the powdered milk may be imported from Chutz La'aretz, and it might be Chalav Nachri. That the Rabbanut allows, based on Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank's heter. So if you look at an Israeli product, you'll often say, it may say on it, kasher la'ochlei avkat chalav nachri. Okay? And that means it doesn't have that. Okay, so I have to stop now and we'll continue next week.